Agree up front that this is the best game since 4.
I will not agree to that.
So really?
We need to let's really? Start this. This is the podcast. We're having it right now.
Yes. Hey, everybody. Hey, hello, everybody. Welcome to 4-Player Podcast. This is the spoiler cast, 4-Player spoiler cast for Resident Evil 7. My name is Nick Henderson. I'm joined today by Brad Simons.
Hello.
And Chris Davis.
Howdy doody.
And joining us from all the way across the pond, community extraordinaire Jaeger. I think we call you Jaeger. Is that what we're going to do in the podcast?
Yeah, that'd be fine. I think that's what everyone knows me by, so
all right,
might as well.
Sounds good. We're also joined, so we're recording this podcast via Discord, and we actually have a bunch of our supporters on Patreon who are spectating this podcast as part of one of our new tiers that we just launched with our recent Patreon campaign update. So I'll do a quick plug there. If you're interested, if you're listening to this and you're interested in spectating these live in the future, you can find out more about that at patreon.com/4player. But enough of that. We're here to talk about Resident Evil 7 and spoil the shit out of it. Talk about maybe going into more detail than we ever could on the actual podcast because we try and tiptoe around things like spoilers. So I'm not sure whether we want to start with, like, just kind of move through the game, or do you want to start with more broad general topics? I mean, there's a lot of stuff going into Resident Evil 7 that differentiate it from everything that came before it. It's first person. It's in VR. It's playable in VR. It's a pretty big departure tonally from, I guess, the more recent Resident Evil. So where would y'all like to start?
Well, let's start off by discussing exactly why Resident Evil 7 is so much better than Resident Evil 4.
No! God damn it, Chris.
No one actually agreed to that. We said best since 4.
Chris Davis is just trying to stir shit up, which is not going to happen. We're going to stay focused. We're going to talk about Resident Evil 7 exclusively. So, let's talk... I mean, I kind of just on a more general level.
Start with the... Go ahead, Nick.
What were you going to say?
Maybe we'll start with the setup and the story and all that jazz.
Well,
I
mean, I was going to start with, you know, tonally, this is a very different game. It opens in Louisiana, which is weird. I thought this game was going to, like, kind of lean into that Louisiana setting more. But the only time it ever really feels distinctly like it takes place in Louisiana is when the game opens. Because it shows that, like, that flyover shot of the car driving down the road, and you pull into, like, the bayou, and then you get out and you're walking around outside for a bit until you find the house. But then you never really... There's maybe a few parts throughout the game where you go to places that maybe feel like Louisiana, but I thought they were going to lean pretty heavily into that, which they didn't. Because after that first opening sequence, it feels pretty, like, you know, cookie-cutter, scary house out in the middle of nowhere, but you don't really get that distinct feeling of... Where, like, see that sense of place, I guess. But yeah, so the game opens, you arrive at the. And you're a. They don't really give a lot of background into this main character that you're playing as, Ethan. You kind of. It is Ethan, right? I got that right?
Yes.
Yeah, Ethan shows up. He's.
Hey, what? I'm going to stop you there.
Whoa.
I'm going to make a point later, and I find it telling just said it's Ethan, right?
I know, and I knew that was going to happen. No, I always get his, I always, what's the name of this, Lucas, I always get Lucas and Ethan mixed up for whatever reason, because their names are, okay, they're not really similar, you know what I mean, point is, moving on, the setup of the game is, Ethan shows up, he gets a message from his wife who disappeared years before, saying that she's at this house in Louisiana, don't come find me, but he says, fuck it, I'm gonna go find her, so he shows up at this house, and...
Well, that's not exactly what happens, actually. She sends him... The last correspondence he has with her is her sending him a video message saying, don't come looking for me. Forget that you ever knew me. And then a couple years later, he gets an email that's very blunt that says, I'm in Dolby, Louisiana. Come find me.
Oh, that's right. Do they ever specify who sent that email, by the way?
They do.
I think Mia does.
That's kind of what I was thinking, but I don't.
That's the impression I got.
Yeah, I don't know if it was ever expressly said, but anyways, he shows up at the house following this email after he had kind of given up and decided he realized, you know, thinking she didn't want to be found, she was no longer part of his life, but he got this email, so he decided to pursue it and shows up at this place, and right from the get go, you get out of the car and it's like. Fucking Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Like, it's very eerie. Did y'all see, when you were creeping around outside before you get up to the house, did anybody else see the Mr. Baker outside?
Yeah, I saw him.
Yeah, I don't know if that was supposed to be obvious or if you could just kind of catch that out of the corner of your eye. Because there were
I actually sprinted after him and looked around the corner.
And he was
and
gone.
He wasn't there. I was thinking, he was just gone.
Yeah, it was one of those kind of fun house things that they do. Because there were a few moments in like the demo when we played the demo, because everyone said you could see the ghost of that girl, or whatever, and you can kind of see her out of the corner of your eye, but then she would be gone. So,
what?
You didn't see that? You could. And now that I'm thinking about it,
when you're doing the tape with the film crew going into the house, if you look around into the forest just beyond the deck, you can see her.
That's
creepy.
And not all the time.
I'm so glad I didn't see that.
No, but the thing is, that doesn't happen every time. I played that demo twice, and the first time it happened, the second time it didn't. And there was also that little room that underneath the stairs that had like the dolls hanging from the ceiling. Right. Sometimes you could see like the ghost of the girl like hanging up like upside down as if she was standing on the ceiling or something looking at you. But that was like super rare. Like I never saw it. I just saw like a screenshot of it somewhere. So that was kind of sprinkled throughout the demo. So I kind of went into this game thinking that was going to be a more prominent feature, which it really wasn't. But yeah, so you show up at this house, you get to the house and someone who played the game most recently, I guess. Brad,
no, it might have been me, yeah.
Because I don't remember specifically the exact sequence of events once you get to the. I remember you get to the house and you end up in like the basement and you're like wandering through the water,
mm-hmm.
which by the way was really fucking creepy in VR.
I feel like we're gonna hear the NVR a lot in this podcast.
It's possible. Yeah. It is definitely possible, and for that I apologize. But I did play this game from start to finish in VR, so it's definitely worth mentioning. But yeah, so I guess in the sake of moving like the spoilery discussion along, this whole beginning sequence kind of leads up to you meeting the Bakers. And the first time you meet them all, you're sitting at the dinner table, and you know they're trying to feed you this nasty looking shit. And then from there, there's like that first chapter of this game, feels kind of like all the way up to the point where you're in the garage fight, felt very different from the rest of the game. Did anybody else have that distinct?
I mean, the point of that was to like introduce. It was linear, but the point of it was to introduce the hide and seek mechanic with the Bakers and just give you an idea that of just how to approach them. I think.
Yeah, because like you spend a good. I don't even remember explicitly how long that first. Chapter of the game was, but you spend a lot of time in that side of the house where you're trying to unlock those double doors and mm-hmm. you're sneaking out of the dining room where grandma is sneaking out of the dining room and trying to solve the puzzles to get the keys that would unlock that door, which is the first time I think this game felt distinctly Resident Evil to me.
I completely agree with that.
So I do want to ask one question because I'm not certain of it. Mm-hmm. In that sequence to where you found the key that opens the hatch in the storage room.
Yes, and I don't even remember where the key was, but yeah, sorry.
I don't remember.
Thinking out loud, keep going.
Yeah.
Jack goes to like the window looking for the police.
And you talk to the police
right
officer
on the
dude.
Table next to him.
Yeah, before that. But when you go for the hatch, Jack can attack you. Did everybody have their leg cut off?
No.
Leg cut off.
You had your leg cut? Oh, that's right.
Yeah, you can get caught by Jack, and if you're not too fast enough, he will chop off your goddamn leg and make you work for it to get it back.
Yeah, so the thing is, Chris Davis had a piece of context that the rest of us were missing throughout, I think, in this game, because that situation where Jack cuts off your leg doesn't... I think it only happens if you... Because you can sneak by him to the point and get into that back room with the hatch without him ever seeing you. And if you do that, like nothing happens. But I think if he sees you, he'll follow you pretty quickly back there and catch you and cut your leg off, which didn't happen for me. But then something weird happened for you, didn't it? Because I went into this game like from the very beginning, I was very confused about how I had, because you get your hand cut off at one point.
Yeah, and that feels like a fail condition, like you fucked up something.
Yes, but then the rest of the game, you're like, it's like sewed back on, but you can still use it, which I thought was weird.
Don't explain a whole lot with at least that aspect of the game.
See, that's another thing that was kind of strange to me, because like, right up front, I was kind of under the impression that like this was going to be building to a, you know, thing where you're going to discover, oh, I'm infected with the same thing they are, because like they could all, like the Bakers were also frequently getting like limbs cut off and mutating and whatnot. And I had a feeling, I thought this was going to be a situation where you, after you had gotten captured, you were infected, and that's why you were able to continue.
No, I agree. It feels like that is like a gameplay mechanic that got cut out of the game, because they don't explore it after you get your leg cut off. They really just let the game go.
Wait, what do you mean let the game go?
It just proceeds without acknowledging the fact that you've had your fucking hand or leg cut off.
Well, the hand thing has to happen. That happened to everybody.
No, and yeah. I understand that. I'm just saying that it feels like it was supposed to be like a mechanic in the game that could have contributed towards an infection or something like that. But they don't talk about it for the rest of the game. It happens, and you're just moving on with the rest of the game. There's no explanation.
Yeah, very true. I thought that was kind of a weird move. I thought that was cool though, because they sew your hand back. Every time you look at your hand, you can actually see like
the staples.
Yeah, the staples where it's been like literally stapled back onto your arm, and then you have the watch that has like the classic Resident Evil, whatever you call it. You know what I'm talking about with
the health gauge.
The health gauge. Yeah. I thought that was a nice touch, especially in VR. Which, sorry, I know you're gonna get tired of me saying that, but it was cool to be able to look down and see that on your hand, and kind of in. You know, the way you would look down at your watch, you actually like look down and see it. It was kind of a cool effect, and it keeps you from pulling you out of the experience to check your health, which is kind of cool. I have a question though, because for everyone else who was in that, so that whole sequence, you're running around trying to get the keys, everything that you need to open those double doors. And I remember seeing pretty frequently in like promotional materials and whatnot, and trailers and stuff, there's that scene of Jack just bursting through that wall in the hallway.
Yeah.
Did that happen for everybody?
That happened to me. Yeah.
It did not happen for me.
It's a very specific trigger. It doesn't have to happen.
So I'm curious as to what actually causes it to happen, though.
I think it happens if you backtrack too much.
Well,
I was going back and forth
all the time, and it never happened.
I think I know what it is. I think it's if Jack has seen you and he's pursuing you and you run past or approach that wall, he can teleport and burst through it. Because I was watching a Giant Bomb video and it showed that happening.
Huh. I thought that was
that completely caught me completely off guard when that happened.
Oh, you didn't see that coming?
I've never seen it.
I was so terrified because I had watched the trailers and everything leading up to the game, and like they kept showing that of him just bursting through the wall, and I recognized that every time I walked in that hallway. I was like, "Fuck, this is the time. This is the moment. I'm walking down this hall and he's gonna burst through that wall, and it's gonna scare the shit out of me." But it never happened.
That was probably one of the big jump scares. For me,
yeah.
Like that and Marguerite, is that your name?
Yeah, Marguerite.
We'll talk about that later, but yeah.
So I guess as far as like the introductory sequence, all this kind of builds up and culminates with the garage fight, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Which,
you know, that fight is really
okay.
I mean,
so
yeah,
this is something I want to. So Jaeger and I had very, very, very different experiences. In the garage.
Very, very, very different.
Oh, the garage fight. Yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. I was jumping ahead. Okay. Yeah, I've heard about what can happen here.
So did anybody else... Okay, so what happened to me, I got in the car and put it in gear, and you actually drive the car around the garage trying to ram Jack.
if you do it correctly, yes.
When you did it, Nick, you ran straight for the car keys, got in the car, and then did it. Me, I ran around the room for a little bit.
Oh.
And then I grabbed the car keys and then I got in the car. He pulled me out of the car, got in the car himself, and he goes, "What a nice car you have here, boy." And he starts driving it around. What are you trying to dodge?
While you're in the front seat, doesn't he?
No. Like, this is what happened to
that
Brett.
That can happen too. Like,
wait, he jumped on the roof.
Wait, Brett, he was driving the car around while you were outside of the car?
Yeah, that happened to me too.
Holy shit.
Yeah, he was driving around for me. I think I fought him twice, though.
He was on your roof, though, wasn't he?
The roof.
Like, he jumped on the roof of the car, ripped the roof off, and then grabbed the steering wheel and started controlling it for you while you were still in the driving seat.
Oh, no, that wasn't me. That must have been Nolan.
No,
that happened to someone then.
That did happen to me too. Like, I mean, eventually that had, like, there's two parts to that whole sequence for me, and that did happen in my, but like after I'd already driven around the room trying to run him over a bunch of times, I think it all kind of ends up culminating in the same kind of conclusion. But the way that it can go down is pretty dramatically different. It was just, I thought that was a really cool sequence because, like, you know, you get in the car and you actually drive it and it feels like, you know, you're controlling it like a car. You're going, you can go forward, you can put it in reverse. And it was super, super intense. But it was crazy when I found out later when Jaeger had told me that played out so differently for him, because I thought it was kind of a scripted moment and that's how it was going to happen for everybody. But that's kind of one of a few examples of in this game where things like that differently.
Let me ask you, there is a point when you're first talking about the game on the podcast, and Nolan had played some as well,
mm-hmm.
where like something happened to you and then something happened to Nolan in different, completely different parts of the house, but y'all weren't spoiling it at the time. What exactly were y'all talking about?
That was this.
That was the garage.
I remember being in chat for that.
But y'all made it sound like y'all were in different places of the house.
No, it was just, I'm pretty sure we were talking about the, because Nolan had this conversation with Jaeger as well about the way things happened differently with me versus y'all's game. And that's what we were trying to tiptoe around on the actual podcast, because I just got lucky and it happened to get in that car really quickly, which gave me the upper hand in that fight super, super early on. But for everybody else, it was kind of a holy shit, run around with like a chicken with your head cut off, trying to avoid him and then get the keys and then get in the car. And then even then it just played out totally differently.
So yeah. Here's something interesting to know about this fight. On Madhouse difficulty, they change a bunch of things. Mm-hmm. They add cassette tapes in places like ink ribbons, and they redo a lot of the enemy placement. But in this
you have to use cassette tapes to save.
Yes, yeah. And they're in limited quantity.
Limited number of times.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so it's more like classic Resident Evil. But I was going to say, in this particular fight, you go over to the table to look for the keys to the car. They're not there.
Where are the keys?
I don't think you can find them.
So you can't use the car to your advantage? I'm wondering if when you're in the car and you're ramming him, if you manage to do that, I'm wondering if that actually does like damage and like makes the fight easier.
I'm sure it does, because I came out of that fight with like no handgun ammo.
Oh wow, Jesus Christ! Yeah. I didn't even find the gun. I think because at some point he knocks the gun out of your hand or something, and for a minute I was terrified that, because I thought the way that the scenario had played out is I had lost the handgun and it had fallen under the car, and I thought I wasn't going to be able to get it back. But I don't think I ever fired a bullet in that fight, or maybe I did. I can't remember.
Well, when he's driving around the car, he's really easy to hit.
I'm sorry. Mr. Green Toes is correcting me here. In Madhouse, the keys are in the same place, but they are in a lockbox. So you got to waste a lockpick to use them.
So are they optional, though? Like, can you just decide, no, I don't want to even use the car at all in that fight?
Yeah, you can do that fight without it.
See, that's cool.
A lot harder, but yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. What did y'all think of the... What did y'all think of that ridiculous kill where he shoves the shovel like through the back of his head?
Does he sharpen his shovel?
But oh my god!
You know, he did. I mean, like, I don't think it works like that. Like, he stabs him through the back of the head with the shovel, cuts his head, the top of his head in half, and the rest of his body. It looked ridiculous. It was like one of those like old like 70s horror movies where like they do some ridiculous like violent kill, but it doesn't make any physical, like it can never humanly happen, or it wasn't humanly possible to happen that way, but it did anyways. I just thought that was a pretty nice touch, because they do a lot of things in this game that kind of throw back and make it call back to like Texas Chainsaw Massacre is like the closest thing I can think of. lot of over.
That's what freaked me out. It was honestly, it was mostly like the baker's accent.
Yeah,
because I watched like Texas Chainsaw Massacre at a very young age. Oh. So just to have this guy like following me around the house, like saying stuff like "Here, piggy, piggy, piggy," like that sort of thing, like. Yeah, like a really thick Cajun accent. I can't handle that.
Do you know when I first saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you know, I guess it was something that doesn't really happen today, but we had rented a movie. We were intending to rent Max Headroom. Is anybody familiar with Max Headroom?
What the fuck is Max Headroom?
And look it up. But the tape inside the case, the Max Headroom case, was the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It was a fuck up on their part. It happened a lot back in the day when you rented from places like Blockbuster. So,
so was this like a video? Like a videotape instead
of a VHS tape. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah.
Wow.
You know, I don't want to jump ahead or I don't know what we're talking about. We're talking about the story, right? But we're kind of walking through the game. You said that you started by saying that the tone of this game, the story of the game is very different than what came before. But I would say in the back half of that game, it was creeping up on the classic Resident Evil that we know and love. Yeah, and I'm not just saying classic Resident Evil. I'm saying like pretty much all Resident Evil, pre-Volcano if you want.
Sure.
But yeah, you know, it's by the end of that and the big spoiler at the end, which we'll talk about later, it's seems like they wanted to fit this comfortably in with the rest of the story, which is a little... I guess we'll talk about that later.
There is a reason why they called this Resident Evil 7 and not just like Resident Evil or something.
Yeah, of course. But
so we'll, you know, I'm not sure
about whether that was a good thing or not.
Yeah, I'm not sure where we want to go from here. We can. I mean, the next kind of sequence is just you kind of running around a more open version of the house. You get through those double doors and you're exploring, and it feels a little bit more like classic Resident Evil because it's a mansion. The only thing that's kind of different is that the earlier part of the game, like the only like constant threat really is Jack walking around the house. For a while you don't actually pick up a gun and fight like just common enemies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you're wandering around this house trying to find keys and solve puzzles and all while kind of avoiding Jack, who's very much kind of like a nemesis character from like Resident Evil 3, but maybe a little harder to predict. Because like for me, like some of the most memorable parts of this game were going up the stairs and into that hallway, kind of that rectangular hallway on the left side where they had like the pool room and the bar. And he spends a lot of time walking around up there. And there's a key sequence up there where you get cornered by him in like a bathroom. Did that happen to y'all as well?
It's a trigger.
Yeah, that was one of the things that happens to everybody.
It was that room, and then there's the room with the shotgun in, like the broken shotgun.
Yes.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I will agree. I think that up until the point where you actually fight him and kill him, the first time or the second time, the second boss fight with him, that is the best part of this game.
Yes.
I seriously do believe that. When you're in the mansion, when he's alive walking around, that's when Resident Evil 7 is at its best.
I will agree with you
there. Which honestly is a very different kind of experience than some of the later parts of the game.
Yeah.
To some extent.
Yeah, for sure. In fact, I think the two strongest chapters in this game, whole game, are the chapter... So the game is kind of broken down into chapters kind of based on your main encounters with the various members of the Baker family. So the first chapter is kind of focused on Jack. You eventually kind of break off away from there, and you go out to like the guest house, and that's where you meet Marguerite. And that kind of like dovetails with the greenhouse area where you fight her. And then the last Baker family member is Lucas, who is in a very different part of the game, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. But like that first part where you're prominently trying to avoid Jack is most similar to classic Resident Evil, because you spend most of your time wandering about looking for keys and solve puzzles while just trying to avoid him. I'm not sure if any of y'all stood your ground again, because he can catch you and you can try to escape and hide, or you can just avoid him entirely, or you can try and stand your ground and you can actually shoot him until he falls down and like gives you a window to actually escape, but he'll eventually get back up. Did anybody actually stand their ground and like try and take him out?
I tried to, but he kept grappling.
Yeah.
Like I didn't want to waste any handgun ammo on him. I tried like taking him down with a knife.
Oh, wow.
He'd just grab you and then he'd just knee you and he'd take up so much health.
That's very bold.
It wasn't really worth it.
Yeah, so
you got to test your ground.
I shot him about 6 or 7 times in the head with a handgun and he went down. This, again, kind of relates to me playing in VR because getting headshots in VR was like very, very easy.
Yeah, I think like we all had like different experiences. Like yeah. I know Brad like struggled to aim quite a bit because
And I have a feeling I probably would too.
Like I mean, I was playing on a keyboard and mouse. Like I didn't really have an issue.
Oh, gotcha. Like, well, yeah. I mean,
it was more early in the game where I was struggling to hit the wavy tube man like enemies. But yeah, by the end of it, I was pretty comfortable.
But wavy tube men, you mean the molded or whatever they're called? Molded.
Yeah, we should talk about that too because
without a doubt, yeah.
I just want to mention about Jack. In comparison to like Nemesis, like Nick was saying, I never fought him. When he spotted me, I would just run away and hide, and it's very easy to get away from him.
I think that's the best way to. I mean, that's kind of what they intended.
But
to
I
do.
Feel like they missed an opportunity with fighting him, in that when you had the encounters in Resident Evil 3 with Nemesis, if you actually stood your ground and fought against him, you would get rewarded with something off his body.
Yeah.
Like you would get like weapon upgrades or value really rare ammo or something like that you can use. And for Jack, you don't get like anything.
Well, the difference
you just get a reprieve.
The difference is here in like in Resident Evil 3 when you fought Nemesis, if you took him down, his body would just stay there until you left and then it would disappear and you can get items. In this game, he falls over and if you stick around for very long, he'll get right back up and come at you. So you're really just fighting for that reprieve, that temporary reprieve.
Yeah, if you do get him down, do not fuck with his corpse, because he will wake up and he will
fuck with you. Yeah,
give you a very bad time.
Oh, did you find this out the hard way?
Yeah.
Nice. But like some of my favorite moments in this game were especially up in that area with the pool hall and everything, the pool room, and trying to avoid Jack. Well, because there's a bunch of like puzzle elements up there, and there's a ton of items to find. Because that's Grandma's room up there, if I remember correctly. Grandma's room is right behind the pool room, and you have to find a key to get in there. But inside her room is a ton of shit.
And she can appear in there too.
Grandma can?
Yeah.
Oh man, we need to talk about Grandma. But
we will. We will.
She like follows you all around the house.
Yeah, but like in a way that's very creepy because you never actually see her move. She just appears places.
Not to mention the fact that she's in a wheelchair and she's getting up and down the stairs so easily.
Yes,
you have to wonder.
Yeah, that's but part of
Remember,
this, part
let's of, not forget this is a spoiler cast.
Yes,
so. Yeah,
but we'll get to her.
Yeah, okay. For sure. What did y'all think of that second Jack boss fight? Because in my opinion, I think that was one of the weakest boss fights in the game. It was kind of frustrating.
Yeah, it's pretty weak.
Yeah,
it's you guys more like a Resident Evil Revelations boss.
Yeah, which something. I have still not played much of Resident Evil Revelations 2, so I don't really know what to compare it to there. But yeah, it didn't feel there are much stronger boss fights in this game, and this is one that I actually played over and over and over, which is really frustrating because the way they load you, I have to run into the room with the cop's body and like find there's some ammo in there, and then I have to run around and run downstairs and find some more ammo, and then I have to go up there and trigger the boss fight to start, and I had to do that fucking every time, and I died like 10 times in that fight, if not more.
Man, I swear that deputy, I was worried about him for like the rest of the game.
Oh, you thought he was thought he was gonna come back?
Yeah, I thought he was gonna come back.
Say that though, doesn't he?
He's like a threat.
I'm gonna catch this guy, and you're going to help me.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah, he kind of does say that. Yeah.
But his head was cut off. Like his head was cut in half.
Yeah. Jack blew his fucking brains out by sticking a gun in his mouth and pulling the trigger, and he came back. So, I mean, there was perfectly the possibility was there.
That is true. But yeah, that boss fight was kind of a clusterfuck. And that, like, I didn't even realize the whole, like, someone in chat had to tell me about the chainsaw. Like, I didn't even see the chainsaw.
Like, I jumped down, and the first thing I saw, like, it flashed on my screen, chainsaw. I was like, huh, I'm going to have to need that later.
Oh, well.
There is an achievement in this game to where when he goes for his lunge attack with his chainsaw/scissor thing, you have to dodge underneath it and attack him.
You just crouch. You crouch, and then you take his legs out with the chainsaw.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's something to do on route on playthrough two.
Well, Brad, what did you think of that fight?
I thought it was bad. I think we should move on. Although I did get through it on my second try, I think.
Oh, Jesus, man. I had such a fucking hard time with that fight. I do not know why.
It took me about three or four times through.
Just one thing I wanted to mention was the molded. Do you think they should have just threw the molded out straight away like that? Because I think like that whole first section where you first meet the molded, that would have been like the perfect instance to just throw like regular zombies out. Like you've got all these, like you find notes of like all these people who they've caught and turned.
Like, so you're saying
one of the notes.
You're
just regular zombies.
Yeah.
I mean, if this is supposed to be a reboot of sorts, you know what? What is with these Revelations style enemies? Revelations 1 style enemies. These monstery creatures. Like actually, it reminds me of enemies from Condemned 2. Honestly.
Yeah, they do. I mean, and, like, even though I like absolutely adored this game, like, you're not going to hear me really defend the molded much. I think, especially because they were like the prominent.
I think the molded should have been like the regenerators of Resident Evil 7.
I mean, they should have been used sparingly.
There was more to the regenerator.
I don't think they need to be sparingly. I think there need to be more variety to them because there's only really like four types.
Yeah.
Because like way back when this game, like they first announced they were doing this game, they said they were taking to The Last of Us for inspiration.
Yeah.
They could have done like you know, in The Last of Us, you have the different stages of the zombie, like the people taken over by the cordyceps. Like you have the ones where they're just like really fast and angry, and then they slow down, and then they become clickers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, they definitely could have found a way to introduce more variety. If I had to lob a complaint at Resident Evil 7, that would probably be my biggest complaint, is the lack of enemy variety, because it does get pretty old when you're fighting molded for the like, and they are pretty much the only non-baker enemy in the game, unless I'm forgetting something.
Well, they're unless you the shitty bugs, but those aren't much better.
Yeah. I mean, it was cool. Like, the one thing I do like about the way they introduced the molded, especially because, unless I'm forgetting a key sequence, like the first time you even meet the molded in the game, you walk into a random room and one just pops out of a wall. There's no like cutscene. There's nothing. You know, you don't even know it's gonna happen. Like kind of like when I was playing the demo, I didn't even know there was an enemy in the demo, and I walked around a corner and it just like I walked like right into its face, which was pretty damn terrifying.
Yeah, it was a great introduction of that monster.
Because I remember it was in one of those rooms, kind of like
it's right near the room where you get the grenade launcher.
Yeah, exactly.
Like it's locked.
Yeah, and you're just cutting through that little room, and it's where you first find that save room before you go down into the basement, and you just cut through that room, and all of a sudden, like it just kind of grows out of the wall in front of you with no warning whatsoever, and that was really cool. And they do that a lot in the game, and they find really interesting ways to introduce that, like when you're in the basement, and like sometimes they'll come crashing out of the vents above you.
There's a special one that comes out of the furnace.
Yeah, yeah.
There's like a massive bomb.
Yeah, like they did some cool stuff with the molded. It's just a missed opportunity, and it does get, you know, they're really just, you know, there's nothing special like from a design standpoint about these enemies. It just, they're kind of, you know, after the first five or six of them.
Should have just been like a bit more of a build up.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So yeah, I will side with you there. I do wish there was more variety. Maybe even something more akin to classic Resident Evil enemies like zombies.
Or like dogs or something.
Yeah. I was fully expecting there to be like twisted versions of like animals or something that would pop up.
You
want to
know what
the
weird thing was?
Huh?
We're in Louisiana. No alligators.
Yeah, where the fuck are the alligators?
That it's missing a little of that crazy camp, you know, like the first game had a big giant snake and the second game had a giant alligator, you know.
The second game had an alligator. This one takes place in Louisiana, no alligator. That's a good point. I never even thought about that, but you're right. There's a big missed opportunity there.
2 out of 10. Fuck it.
But with that said, I do think they, like, for me, they made a really smart decision with the decision, like the bakers are kind of the centerpiece of this game, and I think they're in a big part of what makes this game special, because each one is kind of has their own personality and they're different, and they have, you know, they're broken into their own chapters. It's just an interesting way to spread out the game and pace it, because like the pacing in chapter 2 where you're it's focused on Marguerite, I think is entirely different than the first one, and especially the end of the game where it's very, very combat heavy. You spend the second chapter, you're literally like, you can't hurt Marguerite. Like, I don't even think you can shoot her enough to make her like fall down.
There's an achievement where you have to, she attacks you and you get her.
There's a way to repel her or something. I'm guessing it's something to do with the flamethrower. That would be my guess.
Yeah.
I wanted to conserve ammo for that.
Yeah, because you spend that, the guest house is like infested with those bugs, so you're avoiding the bugs. You're avoiding Marguerite, who's just kind of stalking around the house looking for you with like this creepy lamp. And you're trying to go around, solve puzzles while avoiding her. But you do get a flamethrower, and I walked around a corner, and I inadvertently walked like right into her, and I was just like, "Fuck it!" And I just like unloaded the flamethrower on her, and she didn't die, and she destroyed me.
Can we talk about the weapons?
Yeah, for sure.
I don't want to focus too much on my negatives with the game. I feel like there's going to be enough positivity to go around, though. Mm-hmm. Overall, I did really enjoy this game.
And I know you're going to say, I kind of agree with you.
My strengths are with the structure, the fact that it really did kind of go back to classic Resident Evil and all that. And it was probably the scariest since Remake. This and Remake, I think, are the only really scary ones. And I think this is just as scary as Remake. But but I will say, I was kind of disappointed with the weapons. Not just the lack of variety or inspired weapons, but that the weapons that were seemingly the power weapons felt really weak in this game. In fact, the only time I really felt confident holding something was when I was holding a shotgun.
Yeah, that shotgun was pretty damn good.
I could feel the jump between the first and the second shotgun.
Yeah, and even the second shotgun, too. It was probably the one where I really started to feel powerful. And you have, like, the ammo or the item crafting system, and you can craft, like, heavy handgun ammo. You can craft various types of grenade rounds. You can craft canisters for the flamethrower, but I never really did that because none of that stuff felt very strong. Yeah. You know, I was shooting flame rounds into like two or three molded like groups of them, and I was like, well, I'll finally use one because crafting this only makes two of them. This shit better be powerful. And I would shoot one and not one of them would die. And I'd be like, man, like this shit should hit hard. But it does it. It was the shotgun that made me really feel confident in combat, and that was I found that a little strange.
I mean, yeah, no, you're right. I clung to that shotgun pretty tightly for the majority of the game.
Did y'all try the Magnum?
Never used the Magnum, even though I did unlock it.
I found like four bullets. That's it.
Well,
so I'm so glad we've not.
I mean,
like spending my coins on that thing.
I mean, the thing with Resident Evil, and this is one thing I really liked about the game, was it kind of went back to emphasizing, item management, inventory management throughout the game. And I never really left myself enough space to carry that Magnum with me. And I always thought I was going to be saving it for like a boss or something. And I never actually had it on me when I went into a boss fight. So I never ended up using it, which is sad because I used all those coins to unlock it. I think, right? Don't you unlock it in one of the cages in the?
Yeah, it's 9 coins.
Yeah.
I
spent 9 fucking coins on it. I never used it.
In the caravan trailer.
I bought the other permanent upgrades because I figured I have a hard enough time hitting with this pistol. I know I'm not going to get a lot of Magnum ammo. You know, I'm going to be so fucking frustrated, you know, missing a Magnum shot. So I was like, fuck it, I'll just upgrade the other shit.
Yeah. I will say I did kind of go back and forth a lot between using the shotgun and the handgun because I was having so... Because getting headshots with the handgun was so much easier for me using the VR headset. So I used those pretty evenly. But yeah, the grenade launcher, I think I maybe fired like 3 or 4 rounds the entire game. The flamethrower was good for like taking out those bugs in the guest house.
Did y'all try the poison round?
No, I never tried
the newer round. I didn't even craft one of them.
I never tried it either.
Doing it though.
Well, I'll just say that the flame rounds didn't inspire much confidence. I'm like, well, if these are fire rounds and those other things poison, there's no way they could be that. But who knows?
And you would think that there'd be more variety in the various rounds. Because, I mean, there's always been like acid rounds or high explosive rounds, just regular grenade launcher rounds. Since and those aren't in the game. It's just it's flame and it's poison. That's
I only ever use flame rounds on like bosses.
Yeah. The thing is, they kind of dip their toes into like classic Resident Evil as far as the weapons go, but they don't ever fully commit to it, which is, I think is, honestly, you know, this is, may sound surprising coming from me, but I think that's kind of a mistake. Where this game is the strongest, I think, is where it blends this, like, new tone with, like, the things that I love about classic Resident Evil, and there were things missing, and, like, strong grenade rounds and whatnot. But I really... To kind of get back on track as far as, like, talking about moving through the game, like, that whole sequence in the guest house with Marguerite, I found to be really, really, really intense, and, like, really exciting. And, like, especially there's that moment where you're, like, moving between the walls, and you're, like, you're crawling, and then you get out, and you go up these, like, steps, and you're about to go through a door, and then she, like, steps in front of you. Like, she comes out of the side and, like, pushes you back into that pit. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
That part was fucking crazy. And, I think I used the flamethrower. Like, I wasn't entirely sure what you were supposed to do once you had, like, fallen into that pit. I just sat there from the bottom and, like, shot at her and, like, sprayed flamethrower at her until I think she fell in or something.
Yeah, basically that's the point of the fight. You can actually use very little ammo in that fight to win. All you have to do is just blast her with the
flamethrower
when she's summoning insects, and then just pull out your pistol and shoot her, and she will stagger. Yeah. And she staggers four times, she'll fall out. So four pistol bullets will do the job.
Wow. Man.
All the encounters with her prior to that, though, I always noticed that she was using, like, that little lamp to, like, direct the bug, so I kept trying to shoot a lamp.
Oh, well, that's... Hoping that would do something.
Can we...
Because you need to collect that lamp after it, so they wouldn't let you do that.
I'm going to say this. I think we're kind of inching through this game here, and it is kind of a long game, so we do kind of need to move it along and get to some of the bigger story spoilers and stuff. But I will say that I think the other best part of this game is the actual boss fight you do with this character.
Yes. This is what I mentioned on the podcast. I think that boss fight is going, like, when you fight Marguerite in the greenhouse, is going to come up for me at the end of the year when we're talking about favorite boss fights, potentially. Because that was actually a really interesting, like, the way that fight was structured was really interesting. Not only was it terrifying, but the arena itself was kind of, like, changing how you could, like, kick ladders down, and the way you could move around that environment was very fluid, and it felt really, really, really good.
I know you don't want to hear this comparison, but it reminded me of some of the best boss fights from 4, 5, and I guess even Evil Within. Like, this was a more later Resident Evil boss fight, I should say, but, like, the best example of a boss fight like that.
And I agree with you. I think the difference being the tone. Like, I found this fight to be terrifying. But from a gameplay perspective...
Well, the thing you were fighting just looked really creepy.
Yeah,
her metamorphosis or whatever.
Yeah, the entire fight takes place inside the greenhouse, basically. And there's a lot of room to maneuver, and it really does take advantage of that level design.
And she's really to mention, she's moving around the environment in a really unusual way, and, like, a really unpredictable way. Like, she could be above you, and then, like, she can say things to you that, like, make you, like, look up. Like, one of the first things she does, you come up the stairs after you first... She crashes through that window, is, like, you walk up the stairs, and then she's like, don't look up. And I was like, well, what the fuck? And then I looked up, and then she comes out of the fucking rafters at you. Like... I'm not sure if that happened to y'all.
Wait, what? She said that?
Yeah.
She
crashed through that window, and, like, I shot her with the flamethrower until she, like, retreated. And then I walked up the steps, and the first thing I hear when I get to the top of the steps is, don't look up. And I looked up, and she's in the rafters coming down on top of me. Like,
oh, shit.
That whole sequence was terrifying. And I think I did it on my first or second try, but, like, that fight was incredibly satisfying. And yeah, it does have a lot in common with some of my favorite fights from Resident Evil 4 or 5, but just tonally, the thing that I love about this game is tonally it feels much scarier than some of the more recent Resident Evil games.
That is the boss where, like, the noises that she makes when she's not on the screen.
Yeah.
Like, that was terrifying.
Yeah.
Like,
when she's on screen as well, she's terrifying because she looks really fucked up.
She looks like she's gonna go. You know how Mr. Slave in South Park jumps on people.
Oh, let's not forget about the part where you shoot her in the vagina. Like her weak spot was her vagina, and she was wearing, like, a big diaper. It was really creepy.
It was also pretty disgusting looking.
It was vile.
Yeah, it kind of looked like amygdala from Bloodborne. Do you remember that boss? Bloodborne. Like with all the all the different eyes.
Yes, I do remember that. Yep, that's.
she had amygdala between her legs.
Oh, that's wrong. That's so wrong. But yeah, that was. I love that fight. That was like the fight where I finished that fight, and I was that was kind of the moment where I was like, I am really, really, really into this game. But from that point forward, it takes kind of a weird turn. I think you go back to the house for a little bit, but it's at some point you end up. It's like after that chapter, you move on to the Lucas chapter, which is like the crazy, weird, creepy son.
I would say in the bridge to that though, you had the lantern and you went to go get the arm.
Shit, that's where you have to go through the kids' room.
And then, well, before slightly, yeah, I guess, but that was like the one aspect of this game that felt like it had a supernatural edge.
Yeah,
and.
Well, not entirely. That whole thing on the boat near the end was also fairly supernatural as well, right?
I mean, I would say to a lesser extent.
Well, yeah, you're...
I mean, the whole bedroom thing, that's like your first encounter with Evelyn, like, properly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was that might have been the only time I was, like, Fatal Frame scared in this game.
Yeah, okay, you know where you grab
when
the
you're
arm
backing
you
out of that room? Or I no, backed
you
out
don't...
of it.
Yeah, you backed out of the room.
Everybody backed out of the room except, like, I turned around. Like I was in that room. You get the little shrunken hand or whatever the fuck it is. And then you turn around because you're in that little, like, crawl space. You turn around and the door you came in and there's just 2 feet standing there. Like, there's little
two
girl.
Little young feet.
Yeah, two little...
Really?
Yeah, the little girl is standing there. And, I was like, what the fuck? Like, everybody else... what made everybody back out of that room? Like, I thought
it was scary.
No, it was just Brad who backed out of the room. Like, yeah, I turned around, I saw the two legs.
I could be wrong, but I think Skylander said something about her. She just backed out of that room as well. Like,
it's fucking scary.
Yeah, it was pretty great. Yeah, but y'all didn't even turn around and see what was so fucking scary.
But the thing is, that's not the first time you actually see her. If you do the tape with Mia when she's going through the old house,
yeah,
if you're walking around, you first enter the house, you'll see her over there, and she'll say, "Over here, mommy."
Oh wait,
she'll point you out to Marguerite.
Wait, what?
She will. Wait, where? Wait, which tape are you talking about?
The second tape you get when Mia's trying to escape from Marguerite in the old house.
Oh shit. So she'll be there trying to give your position away?
Yeah, when you first enter, she's on the other side of the broken room, and she'll
no, I saw that. You're right, you're right. Yeah. I did see that as well. That whole part gave me kind of a fear vibe, because, you know...
No, yeah, that was basically Alma.
Yeah.
I mean, this entire game's story felt very fear,
yeah.
Honestly. Which makes sense, because it's the same writer. As a couple of fear expansions.
Well, I was really digging the influence. Also, did y'all y'all went under the house? I think there's one part where you have to go under the house when you're running from Marguerite, and you find something in like the crawl space under the house, and then the lights go out.
I think it's the crank.
Yeah, y'all wouldn't remember that. You go into the house, you find the crank, and you're in that like tight little crawl space, and then the lights go out.
Yeah, that's when you're playing as Mia.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that was right after I just finished watching The Visit, Brad, and the whole sequence where they're under the house playing hide and seek and grandma's under under the house. Like, oh my god, that shit scared the hell out of me. And then like the next day I played that. No, can't do it. Can't fucking do it. But
I kind of knew it was coming because like it goes all black. I was like, okay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I kind of knew it was coming as well, but it didn't make it any less horrifying.
Yeah.
So the next focus of the game is Lucas, who is the weird, creepy kid who likes to make torture rooms. But this is the one thing I kind of wanted to like ask you, Brad, because I don't know. And I know you said it sounds to me like maybe you weren't enjoying the whole escape room aspect of the game much.
I mean, it's not that I wasn't enjoying it. It was just. People kept building it up and Nolan I was just...
Wait, okay, here's the thing.
I was mostly just confused.
Okay, here's the question I have for you.
I didn't know I was doing an escape room, if you will.
Did you do the escape room once or twice? And I'm not saying fuck
everyone
up.
Everyone does it twice, I think.
No, because you can skip that videotape. Like,
I did the videotape.
Okay, because that for me was what made that sequence so special, because I stumbled across that VHS tape. I played the sequence where you're the cameraman who's locked in the escape room and you go through it, but you inevitably die in that sequence. And then you do it again in real, in, you know, real life as the, as Ethan, and you can make the decisions that will allow you to escape that room without dying. And otherwise, if you had not seen that videotape, you would just be doing that by trial and error. But making that kind of an optional thing to find made that super rewarding for me. And I was wondering if maybe your reaction to that sequence was maybe tapered because of the fact that maybe you only
not finding the tape
would have made it even worse.
Yeah, it would have made it even weirder and worse because I probably would have just gotten frustrated. As opposed to, you know.
Yeah.
The second time I did it, I realized I was supposed to figure it out. I just figured it out incorrectly, or I missed something, so I had to do that part twice the second time. But
yeah. Yeah.
So let me ask this in regards to that escape room, because you know the character you play as in the tape dies.
Yeah.
And I assume that scenario can, if you play out the exact same way, the same thing can happen to Ethan. Can you just be burned to death in that room?
Yes, that's what happened to me.
But then it reloads. Oh. But that's just a fail state, and then you just try it again.
Okay, because I was thinking there might be like a difference in like the outcome there. Okay.
No. So it allows you to have that fail state with a story context that wouldn't be, you know, so it's not really a fail state. You're doing that whole sequence. You're failing as a way to guide you through it the second time, which I thought was really, really cool. And I actually really liked that whole sequence. It was kind of a nice change of pace. The fact that I wasn't worrying about having to worry about enemies that entire time, and it was just purely focused on puzzle solving, was cool. And it's weird. Like it's like one of the things that's gonna come out of Resident Evil 7 that I thought I was not expecting was that like this whole escape room thing feels like it's kind of a theme. Like maybe they're trying to, like, this was something they want the game to be remembered for, because the DLC. That came out is very in the same vein as that Happy Birthday escape room, which I didn't see coming. But that was actually one of my favorite parts about the whole game. In fact, that's probably when I'm looking back at the year at the end, I'm probably going to think about that escape room as like one of my favorite moments of the year.
The tapes themselves, I feel like, are a great thing, but they're a huge missed opportunity.
I know where you're going with this, but go ahead and...
So... When you compare how tapes work in the main game versus how they worked in the demos, when you played through the tapes, you could theoretically access drawers and items that you would find that you could get into after you'd done the tape.
Yeah.
Things that were
They only did that in the demo, though, right?
Yeah, they did in the demo. They never did it again in the full
game. Because I think they were trying to hide stuff as part of like an ARG, though.
Yeah.
But I feel like that should have been like a mechanic in the main game that encourages you to play through the tapes and find more stuff. And maybe a drawer that required a lockpick no longer requires a lockpick, and you get the stuff inside it or something like that.
Brad, was that you also that said that the tapes were kind of a missed opportunity? Was it Malia who said that that whole sequence should have maybe been third person, like classic Resident Evil?
How awesome would that have been? Because
absolutely,
that would have been really cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because they could have used like the static angles and just had that been, you know, like camera feed even.
Yeah, that would have been totally all over that. That would have been awesome. Because right now, as it exists now, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Because it's kind of, unless you're just assuming that he strapped like a GoPro to him and then let him loose in this place.
Man, this, I feel like this game, if it would have been third person with the classic camera angles, it would have felt a lot more intimidating and larger than what it is. I mean, just beyond the limitations of tank controls, I mean, if you compare like the main house in first person versus what you can imagine would be in third person, it would feel so different.
So there were people telling me, maybe it was you, Chris Davis, and I kind of disagree, that they think that this game wouldn't have worked in third person. And I'm wondering.
I think it absolutely 100% could have.
Me and Chai Tai were talking about it, and if you put this game into third person, it would be like Resident Evil 1, like a remake.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know. I don't know who's disagreeing, but like, well, why do you? So I understand why it has to be first person for VR, but like, how much doper? Doper. Like, how much more of an enticing a proposal? Is it that, hey, this is a third-person Resident Evil game like I'm used to, but like if I play it in VR, it's a first-person. Think about like Grand Theft Auto 5. When they put in that first-person mode, everyone was talking about it again, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like they should have had first-person exclusive for VR. Because really, I don't understand why, one, it couldn't be third-person, and two, like, you could have done stuff with, like, unlockable outfits. Maybe Ethan could have been more of an interesting character to at least look at.
Well, if you did that, the problem is you've got to change a lot of aspects of the game. You got to change a bunch of level design because you got to give the player room to maneuver around. You've got to.
But I mean, you're still maneuvering around.
But ultimately, they designed this game. They designed the levels are designed around first person.
Yeah, and you've got to change the nature of the enemies. You got to change the nature of how you arrange these environments, I think.
I mean, I wouldn't be that dramatic. I mean, there's plenty of games that have both a third person and first person.
I mean, ultimately, I feel like the decision to make it first person, while yes, was influenced by VR, it's also that they just wanted to do something different. And I think that was a really easy way to do something different.
I agree with that. I think that got people talking like right off the bat. So.
Yeah. And I do agree. I kind of wish that Ethan could have been another like iconic character, but which is hard to do when you can't see the character. But I also, and at this point, like to me, I would love to see Resident Evil move forward as a first person series, even though I feel like it would be detrimental to the, you know, iconic, like the character. Like, it would be hard to present a character in a, you know, exciting way. And for, although it's been done in other series and other franchises, I don't know what they would have to change it.
Throw a lot of different mirrors in the game. That's all you do.
Mirrors, or, you know, maybe cutscenes. Like, maybe don't have cutscenes in first person. Because every time they actually do, like,
I don't know. I think there's plenty of ways for them to figure out how to make a character recognizable and memorable, just apart from like gameplay mechanics or perspective. There's plenty of ways to do that.
Sure. I mean, the thing is, whatever Resident Evil 8 is, if they're going to keep moving forward as in kind of the same vein, especially if it's going to stay first person, I think one of their big focuses should be on finding ways to make that character, you know, like look at the reception of like Watch Dogs to Watch Dogs 2. Like, look what they did for that the character from 1 to 2. Because people were so kind of bummed about the first character not being very likable. And I don't know if the same thing is going to happen here, because it's less about being an unlikable character and more about just being a kind of an absentee character. Like, nobody knows anything about him, really, or sees him, or he doesn't really have any personality, per se, to even talk about.
You know, it's a good example for this, Nick. Huh. From Dead Space 1 to Dead Space 2.
True. But yeah, but
what
even
they do for Isaac,
yeah,
they could totally do that for Ethan.
Sure, but even then, Dead Space has always been a third-person game. So
yeah.
I
feel like you never see his face, do you? Like that sort of thing.
Yeah, but in Dead Space 2, you see it a lot.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean,
actually, no. In Dead Space 1, you see Isaac's face twice. Actually,
it's been so long since I played it.
Is it at the very beginning of the end, very end of the end?
I can picture his face, but only because
He doesn't really have a. Isn't in the first Dead Space Isaac more of a like a silent protagonist?
Yeah, he is.
He kind of is, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
He doesn't really say much in one.
Completely silent, actually.
He doesn't. He does say a lot in two, though. I think, right? He's pretty vocal in two, and you see his face all the time.
That was one of the most celebrated aspects of Dead Space 2, was the fact that your main character actually had a fucking personality and did shit.
So that's kind of what I'm hoping for Resident Evil 8, if they're going to continue that path, is like find ways to make. I mean, not like I'm saying bring back Ethan, because I don't think Ethan is like, you know, I don't know if this is going to continue Ethan's story or what, but whatever they do.
Resident Evil does not just let people go. That's one thing about
Resident Evil. No, they do not.
That is true.
I mean, it could be Mia. You never know.
This is going to be an even number Resident Evil game. They're going to bring back fucking Ada. That's what they do.
No. I'm sorry. Well,
yeah. Let's get back to Lucas.
Wait. Here's the thing about. Here's the only question I have about fucking Lucas. What the fuck happened to Lucas? Because
this is like deep spoiler territory now.
Yeah,
this is.
Deep spoiler territory. He literally gets brushed aside by Jack as Jack comes back at a random moment as like a giant, you know, poop monster. And like,
basically, yeah.
Which again was a very Resident Evil 5.
But that fight was cool too. Like that fight was had an upper level and a lower level, and you were looking for weaknesses that looked like fucking giant eyes, kind of like the Tyrant in Resident Evil 1 and 2. Like that, I thought that was actually a really exciting fight.
It wasn't bad, no, for sure.
But it was just kind of weird because like I thought that whole sequence was building up to a fight with Lucas, and then Jack shows back up and Lucas vanishes.
I hate to break it to you.
What?
Capcom's gonna Capcom. They just want to leave shit open so
Lucas
can come back as a teleporting vampire.
Damn it, Brad.
He's not going to be Wesker 2.0, but like you find a note.
He'll be DLC. He'll probably be in the DLC that's coming.
No, he might be. Yeah, like when you beat the game, it flashes up like a DLC that's coming soon.
So I could
like, free DLC.
I could be remembering this incorrectly. But I seem to remember finding a note that implies that Lucas actually wasn't infected.
No, Lucas was infected, but the organization, like he's in contact with the organization and they're giving him a drug so Evelyn can't control him.
Yeah.
But he still has all like the abilities.
Gotcha.
So he's like a double agent basically spying on the family for him.
Gotcha.
For him.
Okay. So I kind of misinterpreted that, so I'm glad we cleared that up. And Evelyn being the little girl that this whole game is centered around.
Well, let's talk about Evelyn because
so this is where it starts to go. This is where it starts to go Resident Evil. But it went Resident Evil in a way that I'm okay with.
Can I just point out, like in the spoiler cast room, patrons are talking.
Yes.
Gerald says that he wasn't infected. Jack cuts off his arm and he grows his arm back.
Yeah.
He's infected.
Yeah.
Definitely.
No,
infected.
He says no way he wasn't infected.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. But yeah, so do we want to talk about that? Are we moving on to like the boat and like the kind of the concluding chapter? Because this whole like where everything kind of culminates in this game is you learn more. So essentially, your wife, right? Is it
Mia
was actually part of this organization. See, unbeknownst to her, to Ethan, her husband, she was part of this organization, and when she disappeared, she was on a mission to transport this bioweapon, which is this girl they've been experimenting on from they were transporting her on this boat, but they were under the guise of being like parents and a young child, and something happened on the boat and made her kind of fucking go crazy, right? If you remember the specifics of that.
I mean, yeah, she's
essentially
like
she
psi powers or
yeah,
whatever.
She's like Alma. They've experimented on her, and she has all these, powers. She can control people's minds and all this crazy shit. But she breaks loose, and she fucking tears this ship apart, which crashes in the bayou. And she escapes and finds her way to the Baker mansion, where she kind of infects this family's mind. So the Bakers themselves are not really, horrible, terrible people.
Basically molds the Bakers and Mia to like her perfect family.
Yeah.
Quote.
Because
after what Mia does, like Mia lies to her.
Yeah, that's right. She lied to her about being a family and whatever. And this is like this little girl is like kind of obsessed with the idea of having a perfect family. So when she finds out that Mia has lied to her and she's actually just, a job to her or whatever, she freaks the fuck out, kills everybody on board, escapes into the bayou, and kind of takes over this family and molds them into her perfect family, and kind of just stays there as like and uses them to kind of protect her, and
nice.
So that's kind of where this starts to go very Resident Evil, because at this point you're on like a fucking boat and it feels kind of like the concluding chapter of a Resident Evil game.
I feel like the boat is another missed opportunity. They could have gone with a very interesting direction with the story, because I feel like they could have made this particular ship the same ship from Resident Evil 5 that was infected with Ouroboros.
Chris
Davis, Chris Davis.
What?
Straight up murder you. I'm sorry, I didn't say that.
The links that they've been trying to make to the old Resident Evils is like...
It's where it goes wrong.
Yes, that's the stuff they shouldn't be doing. We're going to end up at Resident Evil 6 again. That's how this happens. It's just going to be in first person, and it's going to be like Call of Duty.
Can we go back a little as well? Because we missed the whole choice thing.
Oh yeah. So.
Oh my God. Okay.
You mean the non-choice?
This was just a non-choice. It's not like a problem. It was just silly.
Okay, so like the whole second quarter of the game, you're basically trying to get a cure for Mia and Zoe, who's
you're trying to get a cure for your wife.
Okay, yeah. Zoe's helping you get this cure.
So Zoe is like the strange voice has been calling you throughout the entire game, trying to help you, and she is one of the bakers.
Yep.
So you eventually end up in the situation where you have one vial that will cure them. Do you give it to Mia or do you give it to Zoe? And who the fuck would pick Zoe?
I pick Zoe.
Wait, what?
I pick Zoe.
What is wrong with you? Why would you do that?
This is why you're never going to get married, Chris Davis.
So far, Zoe hadn't cut off my goddamn hand.
Okay.
Wasn't super crazy the entire time.
Hey. Listen. But Mia was not herself.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't fucking matter if Mia cut off your arm. It's not like you thought there was going to be a happy resolution to all this because you made one choice and not the other. You knew fucked up shit was going to happen. Like it just seems crazy to, like, as a player, to make that choice for Ethan. That's just quite honestly insane. Like, if they spend a little more time, like, building that relationship, if maybe you and Zoe was more like fucking Henry and Delilah from, like, Firewatch or some shit. But it wasn't. It really, really wasn't. And it was a strange thing.
So Skyliner says in the chat room, she says, I felt like Zoe was the only one who helped me out and didn't understand why Mia told me to fuck off, stay away, and then called and said help. I think it was implied that Zoe was the one that sent you the email that said help, and Mia actually never had any intention of getting you to come back. Am I understanding this correctly?
I mean, I don't know if there's a direct connection there.
Because you got an email. How the hell would Mia get a hold of a computer to send an email? Like, she sent the tape that said, fuck off, stay away, which you actually get to see her record during that moment of panic on the ship. Like, when everything's falling apart and Evelyn is, like, ripping the fucking ship apart, you get into the bridge or whatever, or one of the rooms near the bridge, and you find this, like, computer with a webcam, and you record that message and you send it to Ethan, and that was kind of like the flashback. But after that, she is, like, being held captive by the bakers. I don't think she would ever even be able to get a message out saying, come help, I changed my mind, come help me. I think it was implied that Zoe sent that message.
I mean, again, I don't think there's any direct connection made, honestly.
Yeah. How does that whole part play out if you pick Zoe?
Yeah.
So if you pick Zoe, what happens is you go away with her in the boat, and you get near the ship, and Evelyn attacks and just fucking murders Zoe. And then the boat you're on capsizes, and you wake up as Mia on the boat.
So it's basically the same thing.
So it's a non-decision.
It's exactly. There's no point in it. And it doesn't make sense, in my opinion, that you would choose Mia and nothing happens to Zoe after. I mean, she doesn't appear until, like, that dream sequence, and that's it.
That is
They just imply that they kill her off for no reason.
Now, I do like – I will say this. It does kind of show promise that maybe they're – you know, thinking about these kinds of things, like choices and maybe how choices can affect story and gameplay.
Agreed. Like, they should have gone more with it.
They definitely should have leaned into that more. And maybe we'll see if that plays a bigger role in the next one. But for the most part, like, that decision in and of itself was silly. I was like, really? I have to decide between Mia, like, my wife, and this woman who I've literally only seen in person for the first time, like, 2 minutes ago?
Who's a part of the most fucked up family in the world?
Yeah. It's
but also the only character in the fucking game that's been helping you out.
I mean...
You're a strange person, Chris Davis.
It's still... Like, you shouldn't even have to think about it. You just Mia straight away.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I really...
Who is Zoe?
I mean, the only reason I hesitated at all was because I was like, what? There's a decision. Like, I did not see it coming. I didn't even know that was a mechanic, quote unquote, in the game, which it isn't. It really isn't. It's a non-issue. So let's move on.
Also, Jeroz is making a good point. When you choose Zoe and you have that encounter in the ship where you transition back to Ethan.
Yeah.
And you fight her a little bit. Yeah. You actually kill Mia.
Wait, what?
You kill Mia.
Mia doesn't survive if you choose Zoe.
Yes, that's correct.
Huh.
Wait, I can't even remember. Did she survive?
Yeah, she's in the helicopter.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay.
If you choose Mia, then in in the ending, Mia survives. But if you choose Zoe, neither survive.
Okay,
well good thing you didn't choose your wife, Chris Davis.
Fucking monster.
Well, heaven forbid I didn't realize what was going to happen.
Hey, you know what? I'm glad Chris Davis chose Zoe, because at least somebody did. We could ask these questions and have this conversation.
We should email Capcom. I bet they didn't even know what would happen.
Oh, my goodness. At that point, we get into, like, Resident Evil territory, and it starts to go full Resident Evil, where it's very combat-focused for the remainder of the game. You get to a point, I think the big reveal for this game, and was it something you had to read, or was this something... So, we mentioned Grandma earlier in the game.
Yeah.
And stop me if I'm skipping too far ahead, because, you know, you go into a mine after you get off the boat, and, you know...
What did y'all think of the boat? At first, when I was there, because you went to it on a tape as well.
Yeah.
I was very, very confused at first. I didn't understand that this whole boat area was going to be a whole...
Like a level.
Like a level. So it was very confusing for me at first. And when I finally started to like put it together and realized that this was going to be just a regular area that I was going to explore. And
yeah,
see, I thought I was late game and I was barreling towards the end. But
me too, actually.
The whole boat is where you find out like Mia is not a babysitter.
Yeah.
She works for some organization. Is being transporting a fucking
bioweapon. Which I'm guessing is going to be some kind of competitor to Umbrella.
That's what I'd imagine, yeah, they have a name as well. Their name's Umbrella. Mentioned in like cases and all that. Like, you know, when you go around in the mines.
Yeah. And I'm sure
like, their name's like strapped to it. I'm trying to remember what it's called now.
And that right there is where they're laying the groundwork for Resident Evil 8, I think. Because I think that's going to play a big role in the next one. I mean, I thought the boat was kind of cool. It was cool because the boat itself was kind of a puzzle, because you have to like navigate it using those elevator shafts, and you have to kind of remember the layout of like, okay, these stairs go up these many levels, but this level's blocked.
There was a little bit of stealth to it as well.
Yeah, because you didn't have much ammo or any ammo for. When you're playing as Mia, you didn't have ammo.
If you fully explored and like found all the secrets in the area, you were like a walking arsenal, which was a little frustrating because you didn't really need all that stuff because you lose it. Well, no, I think you eventually she gives it to Ethan, right? Or Ethan gets her stuff. Yeah. But I was walking around like armed to the T, but I was playing very conservatively. And I think the idea was that you don't play conservatively. You just try to fuck things up. And I had all these remote rounds and machine gun rounds, but I was just kind of playing it safe. It was just kind of
Speaking of those rounds, like those remote control explosives, so fun. So fun to use.
Those were great.
I mean, I wish I could throw them.
Yeah, that was maybe. Nice. You had to like look at the ground and like stick them on.
Yeah.
Kind of strange,
you could also stick them to enemies as well.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
What did you just post in the chat room, Jigger?
That's, if you look at the box very close up, it says Tensu. And people seem to think that's the name of the organization.
Gotcha. I mean, the thing is, the Umbrella thing has been going on since the very beginning, so I'm genuinely curious as to where they're going with this, whole competing organization thing. But that was kind of a neat way, because like the entirety of this game, I was waiting. I was like, what the fuck? How is this going to tie into classic Resident Evil? So. When I started to realize, okay, this is literally starting to feel like Umbrella. Oh, it's not Umbrella. Oh, it's a competing. Okay, I see where this is going. It's kind of strange, but I'm cautiously optimistic about it. We'll see what happens. But what I was going to mention about Grandma. Wait, what?
Nothing. Sorry, go ahead.
So Grandma, who we mentioned earlier, very creepy, shows up everywhere, and all she does is stare at you silently. So, I don't know if you could miss this, but there's a note, which I think, like, the big twist in this game plays out in a note, so that you could totally miss it.
The note explains that Evelyn's infected with, it causes her to rapidly age, but apparently there's a hint at the very start of the game as well, where you see Evelyn, like, as a young teenager.
Yes.
Like the very first picture that you pick up,
and
it's got like
something
like E001. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna have to remember that.
Yes.
And you completely forget about it because you never need it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like that moment where I read this note, because I was sitting here, I was playing it, and like, I turned that note over, I read it, and it said something about, you know, the infection is causing her to age rapidly, and it just fucking clicked in my head. I was like, holy fuck, she's look, grandma.
Yeah, I got it.
There was a point for you and Robin.
Yeah.
Where you thought that Mia
oh my
was
God.
Evelyn?
No. We thought, I mean, well, we were like trying to...
Just
we
for like a very brief instant.
We were hypothesizing, like, maybe Mia is an older version of Evelyn. Like, we didn't know where this was going. But like, the entire time I was sitting here thinking, like, well, if grandma is not the final boss of this game, then they missed a big... It was a big missed opportunity because I just thought that'd be fucking hilarious. But I never... Like, for whatever reason, it never even registered in my head that maybe grandma is the little girl. And when I read that note...
It didn't
register
with me until I actually stuck her with the needle.
Yeah. It fucking
and I was
just,
like, wait a minute.
And it
oh,
just,
that shit, yeah, there she is.
It just fucking clicked. And, like, Robin and I both just, like, jaws hit the floor, like, because we've been, like, the entire time. Like, every time we saw Grandma, it was, like, a big deal. Like, I loved running into Grandma in that game. It was fucking cool. It was creepy as hell. I have a thing about old people. They scare me. So... I mean, that was...
Is, like, is your worst fear going into an old folks home?
No. Like, if y'all have ever seen Pet Sematary, the first one, and she has her, like, sister, like, her older sister, who's, like, not, like, old, but, like, she has this, like, really, like, creepy old lady look vibe to her, like, when... Oh, God, that shit is some of the scariest shit.
Okay, speaking of Grandma, like...
And
the
Visit!
First time
the Visit, man! Fuck that movie!
The first time, like, you left in the room with Grandma... And you notice that a head follows you.
Yeah.
Did you guys... I was hoping that, like, a head would do, like, a full 360
yeah,
degree turn
no,
or something.
I had the exact same thought. It's like, if I go all the way behind her, will she just do, a fucking exorcist and, like, turn around and follow me? Which would have been hilarious. But, yeah, so that was a really, really cool moment for me, too. And then you're in the mine when you kind of find all the stuff and you find the secret underground laboratory where they're doing these experiments and whatnot, and then you come out... You go down this, like, pathway.
That's what Lucas is up to, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, you're probably right. I think Lucas is involved in all that. But they never expressly say that. But then you come out through this passageway, and you're literally back in the mansion. And it was that was another really great moment, because one thing I've always loved about Resident Evil is, especially classic Resident Evil that kind of revolves around exploration, is you start to learn the environments really well. And suddenly I opened this secret door and I was back in the fucking basement of the house. And I was like, oh shit, this literally looped back around and put me back in the house. And I instantly knew where I was based on like landmarks and shit. And that was another, like that was, like, there was a lot of like, it was like moment after moment after moment at the end that was just like really satisfying. And reminded me a lot of classic Resident Evil. But then...
Yeah, it's just like the mansion from Remake.
Yeah.
Like, you know that, like, the back of your hand.
Yeah, and it was funny because, like,
done for it.
The room it dumps you into where you kind of realize you're back in the mansion is literally the room at the end of the demo where I first encountered my first molded in the demo, and you know, where it scared the shit out of me. It was that you come out in the back of that room, and I was like, I know this room. This is the first room in the game that scared the shit out of me. So that was just a cool, satisfying moment. But then really, all this really left to talk about at this point is the boss fight. Where they go Capcom on me. And this is
four
the only moment...
Six.
Yeah, sorry. Four
yeah, they
six.
Steal a boss fight from Six.
So
At least she didn't do a backflip.
I will give it this. It was not a backflipping dinosaur. It looked kind of cool. But I was just like, why? Like, they've done it so well up until this point. Why can Capcom not help themselves? Why can't they just have a more grounded, like, subdued, like, what if Grandma just got out of her wheelchair and started fucking, like, attacking you full head, like, head on, like, super fast, like a fucking zombie from 28 Days Later or something? Like, that would have been fucking horrifying. But no, they had to go with this, like, she morphs into this giant poop monster that breaks out of the top of the mansion and throws you around like a rag doll. Like, I don't know what their obsession is with this weird shit, but, like, that was the only moment in the game where I was just, like, they just kind of resorted back to what I was really upset with them for doing in previous games. I don't know how y'all felt about it. It wasn't terrible. Like, it did not give me the same vibes as, like, Resident Evil 6, where I was just fuming angry at the end of it.
It was all sorts of...
I want to know... You want to know what this boss fight reminded me of? I think maybe only Nick might get this one. Maybe Chris will. Mm-hmm. You know the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie?
Yes, I do. Right?
Are you?
You know when Ivan Ooze, like,
yes. Oh god,
goes forward, like his head's like expands, and how he goes into like a Zord.
Yes, I remember exactly what you're talking about. This is exactly that.
It looks exactly like it.
Oh my god, like, you just ruined this game for me. This is it. This is done. Good night. This is over.
It's like the first 20 seconds of that video I've just posted in the Patreon room. That is that boss. That's what it reminded me of. So like, I couldn't stop laughing. When it happened.
See, like that's telling in and of itself. Like, you got to this point and you couldn't stop laughing. I didn't want to end this game on a moment where I was just like, "That's silly," but
yeah. they had to.
But they get points for going so long without doing it.
Yeah.
But that was the only thing in the game I was genuinely like disappointed with, because that
they just had to bring it back full circle.
That the ending could have been super terrifying. Like that everything in that game tonally was just super satisfying and terrifying to me for the entirety of that game. Super tense. And that last sequence just, like, killed the immersion.
Did anybody die to when they were fighting her up in the attic?
I died
attic?
Once. Did she actually eat you?
Yeah, she fucking eats you and swallows you. And it's
like, what are you actually supposed to do at that part? Like, just unload everything you have? To, like,
yeah, apparently,
it?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't very clear. I thought it was going to be a puzzle-like, but, yeah.
I mean, I looked behind me and there's shotgun ammo, so I was like, okay.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't remember if I died. I think I was just kind of in shock at that point. But yeah, I unloaded everything I had on her, and then she throws you through the roof. She grows into this giant poop monster and throws you out into the front yard, which was weird. And then you just shoot, like, isn't she, like, holding you upside down? You're, like, shooting her while you're being held upside down?
Yeah.
And in classic Resident Evil tradition, you're given a super weapon to kill her with.
It was the super weapon itself, wasn't that just like a strong magnum or something? It wasn't even like
it was called ice magnum. It's called the Albert.
It looked like it was shooting ice.
Yeah, let's not they couldn't help themselves. They called it the fucking Albert.
Do you think that was linked? You think that was linked?
It was a nod to Wesker. I really hope it's not an actual link. Like, it's like, oh, here's Wesker's gun. No, it's just pretty sure it was just a nudge, nudge, wink, wink. This is named after Albert Wesker.
Fun fact, that's a weapon you unlock for New Game Plus.
Yeah.
And so in that boss fight, you get 8 rounds. In New Game Plus, it has 3.
Wonderful.
It just takes regular handgun ammo, though.
Oh, it does?
Like the item that you get to use in like your next playthrough.
I thought you only get 3 rounds for the entire playthrough.
No. Uses regular handgun ammo.
Oh.
It's not as powerful as the one that you use in that boss fight as well.
Damn. Well, that's a bummer.
Yeah.
Like, going back to like what Brad was saying about Ethan, about not really standing out. That is like the one instance in the whole game where Ethan's like, okay, I'm going to be a little cool here. And he does like a little cheesy one-liner. Yeah. When he picks up the gun.
What does he say? What does he say again? Do you remember?
I can't remember what he says.
No. That's a bummer.
He does several cheesy one-liners throughout the entire game.
Nothing that stood out as much as that part, though.
I mean, in the final Jack fight, he's like, Jack, I'm getting really tired of this shit.
But that's not very... That's like, you know...
Yeah, but...
Throwaway dialogue.
I mean, the point of what I'm saying is that he starts out like a lot of these survival horror game characters, which they're weak and they're vulnerable. But by the end of the game, they build them up so much that they feel obligated to throw in these fucking one-liners and that bullshit. When I don't think that should happen with these characters.
Okay, well, see, here's a question I have about this character, and I feel like it was hinted at the end of the game, and I don't know for sure, but. Why does he get saved by Umbrella at the end of this game?
Why does he get saved by a guy claiming to be Chris Redfield?
Why does he get saved by a guy who looks nothing like Chris Redfield?
Why? Okay. Not to mention, you find a note in this game that implies that the events of this game take place 16 years after Resident Evil 2, and this Chris Redfield-looking motherfucker looks like he's 20.
Like, okay, let's talk about that. Because at the end of the game, in the credits, it says Chris Redfield.
Yes. Could it be?
This game takes place like 20 years after Chris Redfield's son is born.
So it's got to be Chris Redfield's son, who he happened to be Chris. I mean, that's the only
wait,
way.
Wait, wow, he has a son?
He has a son at the end of the first game.
What?
I'm pretty sure he does. I've read it somewhere. I'm pretty sure he does.
And I feel like that's the only reason.
This is like one of the speculation things that are going around.
And I feel like that's the only reason they would include that note in the game that gives you a timetable that lets you because they basically tell you 16 years after the events of Resident Evil 2, which would kind of put this character around 20 years old, 21 years old or something.
Yeah.
I mean, that. Resident Evil 2 takes place in September of 1998. Oh, this game takes Resident Evil 7 takes place in July of 2017. So, 19 years.
Okay, that guy could be 19, maybe a little young to be on a special forces team. Jesus Christ. I don't know what it means. It was kind of strange, but I was also like, why is he being rescued by Umbrella? It almost kind of implied that maybe Ethan was working for Umbrella, and he was like actually.
No.
I don't know.
I think.
Like, how do they know to show up?
We know it's all going to get retconned anyways by the.
That just seemed very un-Umbrella. Like, Umbrella would be the type of people to just fucking nuke the place, you know?
Not to mention, did anyone notice the Umbrella logo was blue?
Yeah.
On the helicopter? Like, it kind of implied that maybe Umbrella is no longer what it once was, and it's changed or something, and maybe Umbrella's the good guys now, because Chris Redfield runs it or something?
It also could just be that they did a slight character redesign, because there is a new CG animated movie coming out this year called Vendetta.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I just posted a link to what he looks like in this new movie, so...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he kind of looks similar.
He looks like Resident Evil 5 dude there. Kind of.
He's not that buff.
You think they've just slimmed him down because, like, people made fun of him?
Possibly.
I mean,
became
he was
a bit of a meme?
He was... fucking beefcake in Resident Evil 5.
Yeah.
Huh. I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. This could also be Neo Umbrella, which is the organization set up by Ada, and that's been hinted at for like 4 fucking games at this point.
Could be.
I mean, who fucking knows?
That could be the answer.
We'll probably get an answer once the Not a Hero DLC comes out later this spring.
So there's two more pieces of DLC, which I think are kind of in the same vein as like the bedroom, which is what just came out and I played. But there's also is it free story DLC coming out later? Is that what I
remember? That's what Chris mentioned.
I don't know if it's free.
I thought I remember it being. They said it was going to be free. I could be wrong.
Is there a season pass?
Yeah, there is a season pass. Yeah.
Probably not free then.
No, at the end of the game, like it flashes up on the screen, like free DLC.
I'm sure
it does.
Like the season pass includes bedroom. I think the season pass includes these two $10 DLCs. Well, no, that doesn't make sense either because there's a third one with. I don't fucking know. The point is, there's more story shit coming.
Content.
There is
additional free content. Not a Hero coming spring 2017.
Oh, yep, there it is.
Okay.
Yep, Not a Hero. So I don't know. There's
that looks. Looks kind of action-y, though.
It does.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's going to be like the tail end of the game.
Yeah.
Either that or it might be like a prequel to the game, actually.
Could be.
Because, I mean, in the notes that you find specifically about the events, you know, on the ship, they say that the asset, Evelyn, was sought after by other organizations. They might try to capture her. So maybe that's what this implies.
Maybe you play as Hunk, right?
Hunk? Jesus. Oh God!
Maybe you're being sent by the actual.
Who the fuck cares about Hunk?
Nobody does.
I do.
People who like mercenaries.
You know all about tofu.
Says Brad, who has never cared about a Resident Evil story in his life.
Well, I mean, he was an unlockable mode in Resident Evil 2, which was a great game.
Yeah.
He was also a primary character in Resident Evil Operation Raccoon City.
All right, we don't talk about that game here. Okay?
No, we don't.
Do not.
No, Capcom will never be forgiven for Operation Raccoon City. Fuck them for that.
Can we give our final thoughts here? Because we are running really
Absolutely. Final thoughts. Yeah. Brad, would you care to start?
Okay, so I got some shit, I think because of a tweet or something. When I started sitting down thinking about how I felt about this series and my placement of this game in the series, I made it sound like this was quite low. And I think people took that to mean I didn't really like this game. But I think this what it really means is I think it's a really good series. And outside of a couple of spinoffs and a really bad sixth game. Like, they're all really good to great games.
Yeah, I can agree with you. I can find common ground with you on that.
So that's why I was like, you know, well, you know, 1, 2, and 3. I mean, like, the mainline series outside of 6, I think I prefer all of them. Well, no, I take that back. I didn't play 0, and I know a lot of people maybe don't.
What about Code Veronica?
I like Code Veronica.
I do too.
Man. Like
I do.
That's,
I get a lot of
fucking classic Resident Evil.
I get
still,
a lot,
you know,
of shit for liking Code Veronica, but I love Code Veronica.
Exactly. So when I place this under like most of the mainline series, including 5, I love 5. You know, people kind of bristled at that, I think, but you know, it's a really great series, and the fact that it you know, maybe deserves to be in the mainline series. Again, the exception being 6. You know, I think that's a really positive thing. So
yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I've been, everyone who's followed me on Twitter and on the podcast knows that I've been very, very positive about this game. A lot of that has to, I think a lot of my positivity about this game is also probably going to stem from the fact that, yes, I did play this game from start to finish in VR.
VR is a powerful thing.
It
I'll
is.
Say that.
I mean, just like,
we remember when we first tried it? We were talking so highly about that Until Dawn game.
Yes,
about
that's exactly
Here They
what
Lie.
I was about to say.
I don't think those are great games, but they were definitely, definitely elevated because of VR. And I don't want to take anything away from your experience, but I can completely understand why you, and maybe that I probably would have too, thought even more highly of this game had I played it in VR.
Yeah.
Just the scare factor alone would have been through the roof.
But. Yes. You know, I going into this, I was worried this was just going to be like they were focusing too heavily on VR, and maybe that was going to make the game less of a game. But it seems to be a very positive reception from people who are just playing it without VR, and this just kind of elevates it if you have the ability to play it in VR, which is really nice. Because, like, I have not played a minute of the core game outside of the DLC, outside of a VR headset, and I kind of want to replay the game again if I can find the time without the headset. But yeah, I've been very, very positive about this game, even going as far as to say it's among my favorites. It ranks up there. Like, Resident Evil Remake for me is one of, I think, an amazing game. I think it's kind of ranks up there with it. It you know, it does feel distinctly different, though. The tone is totally different, and the fact that it is first person makes it feel pretty different. But it also I think it kind of separates it from the rest of the series in a really good way. So I don't know. I'm very, very excited. I'm for the first time in a while, I'm very excited to see where they're going to take this and what Resident Evil 8 is going to look like. I'm genuinely curious about what this Not a Hero DLC is going to be, because, you know, it does look kind of...
I can see the Not a Hero DLC being like a setup to the next game.
Yeah, but see, the thing is that they
unless it's a prequel, like Chris said.
Yeah, but they set up such a unique, like, the tone of this game is so different. It's so scary. It's so, like, the pacing is just, I think the pacing in this game is incredible. It goes back to, like, Resident Evil 1, why I love the pacing of those games. Like, it's just, the combat is kind of, you know, combat encounters are few and far between, and in between you're doing, the atmosphere is great, there's scary moments, like, jump scare moments, there's puzzles to solve, like, it kind of goes back to all that, and I feel like the series has gotten away from that. I like the return to form, and for the first time in a while, I'm very optimistic about where the series goes from here. That's all I have. Jaeger.
Well, I mean, like, going from Resident Evil 6, well, because I never played any of the, what are the other games called? Like, on the 3DS?
Oh, Revelation. I mean, there's,
I didn't play any Revelation games, so I went from Resident Evil 6 to this.
Oh, wow.
And to think that they could do a complete 180 and just, like, make me interested in this series again is just...
Yeah, it's crazy. Impressive. Now... Hey, Brad, do you think I should play Revelations 2?
Absolutely. I think that's a really, really fun Resident Evil.
Knowing how I feel about Resident Evil 6.
Nick.
And even
Nick,
5.
Nick.
Yes.
Nick. Play with Robin.
That's a good idea. I might do
Brad
that.
Brad did play through Revelations 2 with Malia.
Okay.
Yeah,
maybe I'll do that. Maybe I will do
but
that.
But is Revelations 1, like, necessary?
I don't like that game.
I
didn't even finish it.
I have played Revelations 1. I would not call it necessary.
Mm.
But that game also, aside from just being kind of forgettable, is also suffers from a lot of the problems that Resident Evil 5 had that I am being very vocal about. So that's why I'm a little hesitant to play Revelations 2. I did play the first chapter of Revelations 2, and aside from, you know, I see it going a little, you know, crazy, I think the gameplay was pretty damn fun.
Yeah.
So, Jaeger, do you have anything else you wanted to say about it? Pretty dope.
Maybe in the next game, I think they should not only focus on classic Resident Evil, but take from Resident Evil 4 and, to an extent, even Resident Evil 5, what made those great games great, and try to incorporate it into this while still keeping the whole classic Resident Evil vibe that this game has.
Yeah, and you know, and
so it would have been nice to have some like weapon upgrades.
Yeah, exactly.
Like proper weapon upgrades.
And I'm totally all for all of that. I just hope it still stays scary. Like, I want Resident Evil to be scary.
Yeah.
And if it can do all those things that you just said and also be scary, then fucking A.
I mean, Evil Within, I feel like, is a good middle ground there.
Yeah, no, I loved Evil Within. The reason I loved Evil Within is because it reminded me of what I loved about classic Resident Evil, but also was... it reminded me of, like, Resident Evil 4, while also being fucking scary at certain parts. Not all of it, but, you know.
Yeah.
It had a really cool fucking atmosphere.
Yeah, no, it does. I think Evil Within is a great game, and I think we'll actually hear about the sequel this year.
I fucking hope
but
so.
But I just... Evil Within, for me, it had some issues, both design-wise and presentation-wise, that really kept me from really enjoying it that much.
The presentation of that game was so crazy good.
There's definitely some jank there.
There's jank, kind of hurts the experience.
There's jank that the excuse...
What are we talking about here?
Widescreen.
Let's wrap this damn thing up.
Yeah, I think Resident Evil 7 is a fine game. I wouldn't say it's the best. I think it has plenty of potential for what's going to come later on down the road.
Best game since 4?
I don't know if it's the best. I mean, it's...
If we can't at least agree on that.
Honestly.
Think about it as a whole.
I think 5 is much more fun and replayable any day of the week.
See, the thing
and
for
it's
me
an innovative
that...
co-op game. What, we can't talk about this.
We cannot have this conversation.
Just give your final thoughts on 6. I mean, 7.
6 is a 4 out of 10. I rated it. But I want to say that Resident Evil has taken on so many different forms, from a first-person game to the traditional classic, you know, fixed camera angles and all that, to a fucking online cooperative experience.
Which we don't talk about here.
Even a third-person fucking shooter. I mean, it's been so many different things that... I mean, I think this is a good direction for them to go in if they're just throwing shit at the wall.
I mean, it's been successful.
I mean, it is successful. I just really hope that they don't look back at some aspects of the previous, say, 5 games or so and say, let's make it more action-y, let's skip out on the horror.
I think the whole reason we got Resident Evil 7 in the first place was because they realized that approach did not work for them the first time.
No, and they absolutely said that in interviews they've done. They've said, yeah, we saw the reception 6 got, and we decided to go in a different direction.
So I think...
Yeah, the main director for 7, like, after he... Like, he did Resident Evil 6.
Yeah. He did?
After Resident Evil 6, yeah. After he went straight to, like, the head of Capcom and whatever, says, we want to strip the series back to its core.
Good.
Like, what made the series, like, great back in the day. What people loved about it.
Good. And I think ultimately what 7 is going to be remembered for is maybe putting the series back on the tracks.
I agree.
So we can let's kind of leave it at that on that note. We cool?
Yeah.
We cool.
All right. Thank you everybody for listening. Thank you to our patrons who are spectating now in our Discord room. We appreciate you taking the time to listen. If you want to find out more about how you can listen to these shows as we record them live, patreon.com/4player is the place for that. And yeah, thank you guys for being here. We'll be recording more of these throughout the year, I guess, whenever big games come out that we all want to, you know, dig into beyond what we can say on the traditional podcast. So I would say keep your eyes peeled for more of these. Thank you, Brad. Thank you, Chris Davis. Thank you, Jaeger. It's been fun.
Yeah.
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 Peace out, everybody. Good night.